भागवते वासुदेवाय नमः भागवते वासुदेवाय Who can remember, or what can you remember from Sunday's class? Symptoms of a person with divine consciousness.
How does he see? How does he feel?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep. In particular, how does he what?
Sit.
I think sit.
Yes.
What else? Can we discuss? How does he sit? Are you here on Sunday?
You're doing some drawings, I thought.
Sorry?
You're doing some drawings, I thought.
We're doing some drawings. What were some of the descriptions that were given in that final section of the Bhagavad Gita that illustrate the character of a person, the characteristics of the person engaged in devotional service, buddhi yoga? How many times was the word buddhi used in the last couple of sections of the Bhagavad Gita, the second chapter? Anybody count it? Something like 32 times the word buddhi is used. Did you remember? Did you hear that?
No.
Characteristics. What are some of the characteristics? If you think back, just now relax a little bit and cast your mind back to Sunday, when that was a long time ago. Wednesday, that was yesterday. Tuesday was the day before. Then Monday, and then the day before Monday was Sunday. So in the morning we were looking at, and each one of you was in a group that was looking at a particular
analogy
or illustration, if you like, of the characteristic. Am I giving you too many hints now? So what were some of the characteristics? Yeah,
I can remember what we did. It was about the voters that, as the voters swept away by the wind, as compared to how the intelligence can be swept away by
mind and the senses. What else have we got over here, Bharat?
How the non-devotee and devotee act night and day.
Yeah.
Okay, so how does a devotee behave?
In the morning he chants rounds, finishes bhagavatam and does
what
he does.
What is
Yeah, what is the devotee?
The devotee is always engaged in devotional service.
The devotee is always engaged in devotional service. Yes.
Always desires for devotional service.
Always desires for devotional service. Yeah.
And so we are doing the contemplating of the seven senses, how the devotee can, how one can deviate from the.
And the devotees can control the senses similar to tortoise and analogy.
Keeps engaged in devotional service. Yes. A devotee is active in the night of the materialistic men, but actively engaged in devotional service. Right? So actually in the section you've got a couple of things. You've got a comparison. You've got the qualities of the devotee engaged in devotional service and how he's steady and focused. And then you've got what happens if you don't remain steady and focused, you can get carried away. So the devotee remains fixed, controlled, by keeping engaged in devotional service. What else happens to the mind of a devotee? Qualifications, qualities of a devotee, actually.
Equipoise, not disinterested.
Yes, equipoise.
Indifference.
Does he have desires or not?
Yes.
Yes, he does. What kind of desires?
Spiritual.
No material desires?
Absorption in Krishna.
Yeah. What if he has some material desires?
Isn't satisfied
with the needs of Krishna. What if he has material desires?
Engages those material desires.
He engages those material desires in Krishna's service? Yeah, maybe. What else does he do?
Restrains
himself, yes. So what then does he do? What's the example?
Tortoise.
Yeah, there's another one. Yeah, there's another one.
Snake.
Another one.
Maharajambarish.
Another one. In the text itself. In the text itself.
The rivers flowing down into the ocean.
Yes, the rivers flowing into the ocean. What does that mean? Not disturbed.
Equipoise.
Not disturbed. Even though there's... Because he is what?
Equipoise.
Yes.
Detached.
Yes. What else? Yes. What else?
Yes.
What else? Got a high attach, yes?
Well, he is Krishna
conscious. Yes. Yes, but there's more to it than that, I think. Yeah.
He's deep.
He's deep. And as a qualification of his depth, what is he? What is he? What is he? It's mentioned in the verse. Yes. Steady. And as a result of being steady, what is he?
Peaceful.
Yeah, that's what, this is in the text itself. This is in the text of the Bhagavad Gita. He's peaceful. And of course, Krishna's saying, if you're not peaceful, then how can you be?
Happy.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, these are qualifications of a devotee. Right? Anybody remember anything else? No, I reckon we're probably exhausted. Okay. Now, in chapter 3, Arjuna is inquiring from Krishna because he's confused. He thinks, because Krishna has emphasized buddhi yoga, cultivating one's intelligence, discrimination. So he's thinking, okay, Krishna wants me to be a discriminating person. So that means that I should choose what I do and I should act properly. So let me not engage in this fighting. He doesn't want to fight anyway. But, you know, he's somewhat bewildered here because he thinks that buddhi yoga is retirement. A lot of people think this. Spiritual life means retirement. Something you do when you retire. But this is just an excuse. Prabhupada said, this is an excuse. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, has very elaborately described the constitution of the soul in the previous chapter. This is in the purport. With a view to delivering his intimate friend Arjuna from the ocean of material grief. And the path of realization has been recommended, buddhi yoga or Krishna consciousness. Sometimes Krishna consciousness is misunderstood to be inertia. Right? We find that sometimes the devotees get a little bit lazy and they become a little bewildered. And one with such a misunderstanding often withdraws to a secluded place to become fully Krishna conscious by chanting the holy name of Lord Krishna. But without being trained in the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, it is not advisable to chant the holy name of Krishna in a secluded place, where one may acquire only cheap adoration from the innocent public. Arjuna also thought of Krishna consciousness or Buddha Yoga or intelligence in spiritual advancement of knowledge as something like retirement from active life and the practice of penance and austerity at a secluded place. In other words, he wanted to skillfully avoid the fighting by using Krishna consciousness as an excuse. I need to cultivate my intelligence, I need to cultivate a proper understanding of things, use my intelligence, therefore I should withdraw from the fight. But as a sincere student, he placed the matter before his master and questioned Krishna as to his best course of action. In answer, Lord Krishna elaborately explained karma yoga, or work in Krishna consciousness, in this third chapter. Yeah. Prabhupada says, in Vrindavan, you'll find so-called devotees of Krishna living in seclusion and supposedly chanting Hare Krishna. In practice, it has been seen that such an artificial way of trying to become Krishna conscious does not make anyone advanced. They live in a secluded place and chant Hare Krishna, but when they come out, they are smoking. They cannot even give up tobacco, let alone the other enticements of this world, let alone the other things. When you become mature, then you may wish to try living in seclusion, but mature. Maya is everywhere, just in case you haven't noticed. And she will tempt you with, for example, tobacco, let alone the other enticements, as he mentioned previously. In general, people understand that by retiring from ordinary life, one becomes spiritually advanced. That is being taught here, but it is not like that. Krishna taught to the whole world that Arjuna was a soldier, he was a fighter, and even by fighting and carrying out his prescribed duty, he can be Krishna conscious. This is an important point because, you know, there is a misunderstanding that spiritual life means to retire and to seek seclusion. It's not so much, you know, the purpose for seeking out seclusion is to avoid bad association. That's the purpose. Right? But it doesn't mean that one should not be active. Right? And of course, this is what Krishna elaborates on in this section of the Bhagavad Gita. You will be forced to act because it's your nature. And if you're not purified in consciousness, then you'll be acting under the influence of the attractions of the material energy. Huh? So, better to act in the appropriate way rather than to prematurely renounce. You know, it comes to mind, there's a verse Rupa Goswami gives. What is it? Prapanchikataya Buddhya, I can't remember all the words, but Nibandha Krishna Sambandha Yuktam Vairagya Uchate. Prabhupada talks about the Falgu Vairagi. Right? There's a river called the River Falgu, which is dry on the river bed. But if you dig down, you'll find water flowing underneath. Right? So he says, a person who artificially renounces without being purified, this comes up in the next few verses, Even though they may make a show of renunciation, material desires still exist within the heart, and they'll manifest. Just like the river looks like it doesn't have any water in it, so it appears to be dry. But if you dig a little deep, then you'll find a water flowing underneath in the sand. So that renunciation of things prematurely is considered to be like that immature. Or that it will, on the face of it, appear to be renunciation, but underneath the material desires will still exist. Whereas, real renunciation means seeing things and their relationship with Krishna, this is the knowledge aspect of it, and then knowing how to use those things in Krishna's service. That's the karma aspect of it, if you like. Utilization. Right? The proper understanding is realizing I'm not the body, I'm a spirit soul, I'm a servant of Krishna, I have certain characteristics, certain propensities. Let me use those propensities in service to Krishna. Let me act, use my natural tendency to act and the propensities I have to act in Krishna consciousness or act on Krishna's behalf, and then I can utilize that tendency or those desires, as we were discussing before, in Krishna's service, and thereby make proper utility of those things rather than trying to restrain them artificially. Sometimes neophyte devotees also have the same misconception that Krishna consciousness means chanting a holy name in a secluded place. The only gain from such practice is cheap adoration from the innocent public. My intelligence is bewildered. This is Arjuna's next question. My intelligence is bewildered by your equivocal instructions. Therefore, please tell me decisively which will be most beneficial for me. Prabhupada says, sometimes things appear contradictory to the student. In fact, the master conversant in these matters does not say anything contradictory. Sometimes a student will misunderstand and think there are contradictions. Therefore, students are advised to ask questions, and this is what Arjuna is doing. I'm not sure what you mean here. He's thinking buddhi yoga and the cultivation of knowledge and the recommendation to act altogether make a confusing situation. With this misapprehension or misunderstanding that, you know, cultivation of knowledge or even the cultivation of buddhi yoga means to retire. As a result of that confusion, then Arjuna is doing the right thing. He's inquiring from Krishna. Tadvidhi. They should understand the transcendental science. First of all, surrender, then question, then seva, service. Surrender, service, and question. Here's an important point. If you simply question without surrender and don't render any service, then you are simply wasting your time. And sometimes you get devotees who are very inquisitive, ask lots of questions, but they don't do anything. So it has to be practically applied. Prabhupada gives a nice example here in the purport. In the second chapter, verse 39, the Lord explained two kinds of procedures, namely Sankhya Yoga and Karma Yoga, or he describes it as Buddhi Yoga. In this verse, the Lord, this is text number 3, the Lord explains the same more clearly. Sankhya Yoga, or the analytical study of the nature of spirit matter, is a subject matter for persons who are inclined to speculate and understand things by experimental knowledge and philosophy. The other parts of men work in Krishna consciousness, as it is explained in the 61st verse of the second chapter. The Lord has explained also in the 39th verse that that by working by the principles of Buddha Yoga or Krishna consciousness, one can be relieved from the bonds of action. And furthermore, there is no flaw in the process. The same principle is more clearly explained in the 61st verse, that this Buddha Yoga is to depend entirely on the Supreme, or more specifically on Krishna. And in this way, all the senses can be brought under control very easily. Therefore, both the yogas are interdependent as religion and philosophy. Religion without philosophy is sentiment, or sometimes fanaticism, while philosophy without religion is mental speculation. That's a nice quotation. In other words, if we are to act, we should act supported by the right philosophy. And if we are philosophical, we shouldn't, as Prabhupada says, we shouldn't just be armchair philosophers. Huh? Our philosophy is the basis for action. Huh? Why do we study the philosophy? What is the purpose for studying the philosophy? Just to become a big brain?
To practice.
Why is that beneficial for us? Why is it beneficial for us? To learn the philosophy.
Because you have an understanding, when things go difficult in Krishna consciousness or whatever, then once you have a proper understanding of the philosophy, then you can get through that stage.
Yeah, that's good. Chaitanya?
Also we know the difference between Phagu Vairagya and Yukta Vairagya.
Yeah, we know the difference. Yeah, what's that mean?
So that we can utilize whatever activities we do in our daily life with Krishna consciousness, centered around Krishna.
You might even know, well, this is the right thing to do, but that's not the right thing to do. You know, so you can be like the tortoise. Huh? Why else is it important to understand the philosophy?
To reach the goal of the life.
Hmm?
The goal of the life.
Yeah, it's the goal of life. You can understand the goal of life. Yeah.
You can preach.
You can preach to others? Yeah, that's good. Okay, why is it important to put the philosophy into practice?
To get realization to Krishna.
To get realizations? Yeah. What else?
To
go back to Godhead? Yes, that's what that's understood. Purify yourself. Yes, it's important to engage. That's what Prabhupada is saying here. You can inquire, you then receive the instruction, and then what do you do? Go to sleep? No, don't do it. Why do it? Why do it? Why do we do that? Chapter 4, text 34. What does Krishna say? For self-realization, for purification, and for realization, as Krishna says, and we were studying this before. It's very interesting. 10:10. Krishna says, if you engage in devotional service, then I will guide you, right? And Prabhupada says, we're studying this in the second chapter, by following the instructions of Krishna, then engaging in devotional service, and we do that by following the spiritual master's instructions, then Krishna reveals himself gradually to us, right? As long as we keep engaged in devotional service, then Krishna will reveal himself. So this is important. It's important that we understand there is it's not one or the other. You know, sometimes you think there's exclusivity. And that's what Arjuna's thinking. Oh, if it's going to be cultivation of knowledge, then that means no action. I can retire, you know, to cultivate my proper understanding of things. But what is actually meant, and there are two different types of cultivation, if you like. But Krishna is recommending a combination of the two, right? Proper action, or action with the proper understanding. And that's going to be then renunciation, right? Real renunciation or sacrifice. Who knows what's verse 9? This will test to see who's read the
chapter.
Read this section. Chapter 3, text 9. What's the first word?
Work.
First word. Don't look at the book.
Work.
No,
work.
No.
Work.
No. It's Jagya. Jagyata karmanonyatra lokoyam karma bandhanaha. Activities not performed with the goal of sacrifice create bondage. Activities performed with the proper understanding, proper focus, sacrifice for the pleasure of Krishna, basically, and that's going to come later on, is purifying, right? Let's see what we've got here. Okay. Let's have a look. Prabhupada says, there are certain classes of men who simply philosophize. Right? And there are certain classes of men who simply blindly follow religious ritualistic processes. The Bhagavad Gita is a scientific combination of both. Right? We cultivate knowledge, we do our pujas and actions and so forth, but they're combined together. You should be religious. But you should also understand everything philosophically, right? You know, I sometimes hear it from the devotees who come from India. I say, you know, my grandma taught me that I should worship Tulsi every day, but she couldn't tell me why. But now I come to the temple, I've found out why we should do it, right? So you can do things in a very mechanical fashion, right? We could get a robot to do the arty. Right? But it wouldn't have much benefit. So you do things mechanically, but you have to understand the purpose for doing it. Otherwise, after a while, you think, what am I doing this for? I could go and do something else. Or, sometimes people do these things, but they do them for material purposes, which we'll discuss a little bit later on. You should be religious, but you should also understand everything philosophically. Otherwise, one becomes a religious fanatic. Huh? Who likes religious fanatics? No one. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is clearly said, Chaitanya doya kata karaha bichar. You people try to understand the gifts of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by your philosophical understanding, not blindly, but philosophically. And bicha karele chite poi be chamatka. If you are actually a wise man, then you'll find it is sublime. If you simply stick your own religious ritualistic principles without trying to understand the philosophy of everything, then you become a fanatic. What are the examples of religious fanaticism that we see occasionally in the world? Yeah, it's not difficult to find an example in this day and age. Huh? So we should not become religious fanatics nor dry mental speculators. Both these classes of men are dangerous. Right? There are those who just stick fanatically to the, and there are those who are just dry philosophers. They cannot make any advancement. You should be religious and also try to understand each and every line philosophically. Each and every line. Right? That doesn't mean we have to read everything. We just need to understand something. We should know what we're talking about. And we should know what we're doing. One of the things that just occurred to me before is why we need to understand what we're doing. We need to realize Krishna consciousness, and then we need to be able to in applying it to ourselves, we then should know how then to apply it in helping others. You know, really, we're here to help others. And automatically we'll be looked after. But of course, one of the ways in which we can help others is if we help ourselves first. Right? So we need to know. We're going to understand. Here's how I apply Krishna consciousness, and how is that principle, which has helped me, then going to be applied to help this one, that one, the other one. Do you know what I mean? That's maturity in Krishna consciousness, is being able to help others. We have seen many such philosophical speculators. They simply talk in the meetings and that's all. And if we examine their private character, it is less than ordinary. Less than ordinary. A person may be a nice speaker, but will that help you in your spiritual realization? On the other hand, if you chant Hare Krishna, it will give you immediate results. Here's an interesting point. The two levels of jnana and karma are actually two different stages of the yoga ladder. And the reason why action is recommended first is because by acting according to your position, your appropriate position, you'll gradually be purified. Then as a result of that purification, you'll come to the point of knowledge. And renunciation will come automatically. It won't be a strain for you. Right? Then you can just give up everything based on a firm understanding of things. Right? This is why, you know, Arjuna's position is very pertinent or appropriate for us, because he's a kshatriya, he's a fighter, he's a grihastha, he's a householder, right? So for him to, you know, want to renounce everything is premature. So it's a good example for most people, right? We got any up and coming sannyasis here, budding sannyasis? Mm-hmm. Look around the room. Maybe a few down, the older fellows down here. Right? But certainly none of the young blokes in here. Right? Right? So it's relevant for us. Taking sannyas without purification of heart is simply a disturbance to the social order. That's what Krishna's saying. You know, you become a renunciate, you'll be a disturbance. You'll be disturbed, and you'll disturb everybody else by your misbehavior. Prabhupada says, some of our students went to a well-known Swami here in New York and found that he was smoking. A student said, Swamiji, we got to smoke. And he was ashamed. So what is the use of taking this kind of sannyas? Huh? You see it in India sometimes. You see the sannyasi and his wives. Or his wife and kids. And he and his wife are wearing saffron. Huh? You see it? I have. Sannyas means to give up all material contaminated activities for the sake of the Supreme Lord. That is called sannyas. Sannyas. This is the combination. Sat means the Supreme, the ever-existing, and yas means renunciation. That means one who has renounced everything for serving the Supreme is a real sannyasi. So this is the point for Arjuna. Give up your misconceptions. Give up your preconceptions, and dedicate your life to serving me, basically. That's real sannyas. For a grihastha, that is sannyas, actually. Huh? How he dresses doesn't matter. Huh? It doesn't matter. It's your consciousness that counts. Anyone who has sacrificed his life for service of the Supreme Lord, he's a sannyasi. Right? He's a sannyasi. That's why we need to go to the guru and ask him, what do I do? How do I serve Krishna? I think I should become a sannyasi. Okay, yes. Your sannyas is to look after your wife and children. This is your renunciation. For most of us, anyway. For those of us whose families have grown up and left home and we don't have to support them anymore, then maybe it's time to then make a change. As appropriate. Right? That's also sannyas. Yeah. Everybody has to act. Right? None of us can sit still for very long. And if we don't act for Krishna, then what will happen? It is not a question of, this Prabhupada says in the third point, it is not a question of embodied life, but it is the nature of the soul to be always active. Without the presence of the spirit soul, the material body is what?
Dead.
Cannot move, Prabhupada says. The body is only a dead vehicle to be worked by the spirit soul. Just a dead vehicle. Just a lump of matter that has no life. The spirit soul is always active and cannot stop even for a moment. Even when we're sleeping, right? We're asleep, we appear to be inactive, but still the heart is pumping, the breathing is going on, the internal organs are working. The symptoms of the soul are still there, present within the body, even though we're asleep. As such, the spirit soul has to be made to work in consciousness. Otherwise, it will be engaged in occupations by illusory energy. In contact with material energy, the spirit soul acquires material modes, and to purify the soul from such affinities, it is necessary to engage in the prescribed duties enjoined in the Shastra. But if the soul is engaged in his natural function of Krishna consciousness, whatever he is able to do is good for him. Prabhupada said, we saw a signboard in a yoga society in Los Angeles that said, you become silent and you'll become God. And here Krishna says that you cannot become silent. You'll find it in the saintly persons who observe silence. That's good, actually. Prabhupada says that's good, because then they don't talk nonsense. Good, keep quiet. Ramaraj says it is for the Ajitendriyanam. This process, mona, to remain silent, is meant for persons who cannot control the senses. It is better not to talk than to talk rubbish. Many people think they will advance by not talking. If you ask a question, they'll reply in writing. No, don't talk. Write it out on a piece of paper. What is the difference between talking and writing, Prabhupada says? It is all sense gratification, and the fact is, you cannot stop the tongue and do not talk material subject matters. We are recommended to engage our senses in Krishna's service. And not make a show. Right? Not make a show. One who restrains the senses of action, but whose mind dwells on sense objects, certainly in the purport, but he who makes a show of being a while actually searching for the objects of sense gratification must be called the greatest cheater. Even though he sometimes speaks of philosophy, his knowledge has no value, because the effects of such a simple man's knowledge are taken away by the illusory energy of the Lord. Such a pretender's mind is always impure, and therefore his show of yogic meditation has no value whatsoever. Prabhupada says, obviously from Bhakti Loka, from Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Dharma Dvaji, means the hypocritically devout who accept external signs of dharma but do not accept dharma. The hypocrites and the fools, the cheated. In devotional service, this ruins everything. Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, better to associate with sense enjoyers. For in this world, there is no worse association. Right? Better to go and associate with sense gratifiers than devotees who are externally manifesting as renunciates but internally cultivating sense gratification. That's heavy, isn't it? Jai Gopal says to Prabhupada, people who stop performing prescribed duty to engage in so-called meditation, are they actually committing simple activity? Is this actually simple activity? Meditation? Look at the result. Many meditate but achieve little advancement. Phalena padachiyate. What does that mean? Phalena padachiyate.
Fruits.
Yes. In English we say, judge the, what is it? The result by the fruit of the action. Huh?
The proof is in the pudding.
The proof is in the pudding. Yes, the proof is in the pudding.
The proof of the pudding is the eating.
The proof of the pudding is in the eating. We can relate to that. Yeah. If a man has worked very hard and has become wealthy, but does not have a desirable apartment, nor a car, nor any other show of wealth, where is the evidence of his success? So if a person by practice of meditation is actually advancing in spiritual, why is he materially affected?
Ooh.
That means we have to make advancement. Why are we materially affected? Hanging on, hanging, attached. Still attached. Right? This is a good reason why Krishna is saying to... I want to read a story to you in a minute. Hopefully I can get through this quickly. A very interesting story that I got in an email the other day, and I thought, oh, there's another one of these long stories that somebody sent me. I haven't got time to read. You know, in the internet age, if anything is more than two screens full, then you think, oh no, I have to concentrate for that long. Right? I have to read something for that long. That illustrates these points. Before an examination, a student may study a lot, but if he fails, does it mean that he studied? If I failed an exam, you can be sure that I didn't study. And even if I passed, you can be sure I didn't study. It means he did not study at all. The test is that spiritual advancement means minimizing material activities. Bhakti parashana bhavopi bhakti anyat prashyat. Automatically they will give up material engagement and concentrate on spiritual advancement. Prabhupada gives the example of a hungry person. Huh? You feed him, and then automatically what will happen? You want one more gulab jamun? One more gulab jamun. Oh no, I've had enough. Come on, just one more gulab jamun. Oh. No. Huh? So in Krishna consciousness, one's automatically satisfied. I see, in Krishna consciousness, you can be automatically satisfied and take more. Huh? Similarly, spiritual advancement means that one should shun material engagement. That is the test. If one is advancing, he has to demonstrate his detachment from material engagement. This is not only for meditators. It is for everyone. How far you're advancing in Krishna consciousness? How far you become detached from material consciousness? Your dislike of material engagement is proportionate to your advancement in Krishna consciousness. So everyone has to ask himself, this is a question that we need to ask ourselves, how far have I advanced? Or how far have I become detached from material contamination? If you should, are sincere, you should examine yourself. Proper. Nice. Okay. So, again, this illustrates this point of becoming properly detached, at the right time, becoming renounced. Not making a show. You know, in the example, one of these examples of the shovels in the chemist shop. Not many chemists have it. If Arnold's chemist down the road here, on the top shelf, he has some bottles. And in those bottles, there's all coloured water, right? These are called show bottles. They look like they've got chemicals in them. But if you mix those chemicals together, you know what you'll get? Different types of coloured water. You'll get a substantial reaction out of it. So it's a show bottle. That's what a show bottle is. So Krishna's saying to Arjuna, you know, you're forced to act. You can't renounce. To understand what I'm saying, the proper principle of renunciation is to act in knowledge. Next. And now here's how, this is how a devotee engages in text 7. On the other hand, if a sincere person tries to control the active senses by the mind and begins karma yoga here in Krishna consciousness, right? Without attachment, he is by far superior. This is what we want. We don't become a pseudo transcendentalist, but rather we become a sincere devotee engaged in devotional activities. Prabhupada says it nice. At the end of the purple Prabhupada says, a sincere sweeper in the street is far better than the charlatan meditator who meditates only for the sake of living. So, you know, there are devotees who, you see, they have a temple and, you know, they use the temple and the puja of the deity simply to get some donations. And then they use that money to fill their belly. Huh? And neglect preaching and neglect even the deity worship sometimes. Not very good. Perform your prescribed duty, for doing so is better than not working. One cannot even maintain one's physical body without work. Huh? Yeah. Prabhupada says in the purport, there are many pseudo meditators of my heritage and great professional men who falsely propose that they have sacrificed everything for the sake of advancement in spiritual life. Lord Krishna did not want Arjuna to become a pretender. He desired that Arjuna perform his prescribed duties as set forth for Kshatriyas. There was a tiger who posed as a saint in order to cheat the traveller. He called the traveller, saying that he wanted to give him a gold bracelet in charity. The traveller asked, "Can I trust a ferocious animal like you?" The tiger said, "In my youth I was wicked and killed many cows and humans. But I am a person to do charity and act religiously." The scriptures say religious 8 types. 1, sacrifice. 2, study of scripture. 3, charity. 4, austerities. 5, speaking truth. 6, patience. 7, forgiveness. And 8, not being greedy. The first four can be performed out of show, whereas the last four are found only in great souls. The first four can be performed out of show, right? Sacrifice, study of scripture, charity, and austerities. The last four have to be done, they'll be shine up if they're not. Speaking the truth, being patient, being merciful, and not being greedy. How to make a show of those things, right? The tiger preached duplicitously and induced the traveller to come for the bracelet. On the way, he got stuck in the mud and the tiger ate him. That's a good story. So what does that mean? Don't make a show. So how should you act? Is described in the ninth. In the ninth verse. Work done as a sacrifice for Vishnu has to be performed, otherwise work causes bondage in the world. This is important for his satisfaction, and in that way you will always remain free. Kagyata kamano yatra. Does anyone have any comments or questions?
I want some more explanation on how the work actually purifies our soul.
How does it purify us?
Yeah.
Well, the work is meant to be performed according to certain rules and regulations. Right? If you're a householder, then there are certain disciplines that you're meant to follow. Same for a sannyasi, same for a brahmachari, same for the vanaprastha. So, there are duties to be performed as a result of work before, and there are duties to be performed as a result of the act that you're situated in. Right? And by sticking carefully to those prescriptions, you will go through the trials, the tribulations, the successes, and all of the things. And see, this is the point. Krishna is saying, act, but with a sense of duty, without attachment to the result. He says earlier on in the second chapter we were discussing, if you act with attachment to the result, then you'll be the cause of the action. And then you'll have to suffer, enjoy or suffer the result that you get. But if you act as a householder, right, with the ashram duties and varana, if you like, occupational duties, those prescriptions in mind, then whatever comes, you accept it as Krishna's mercy. Now, how do you determine how you should act in your ashram and in your varana? How do you determine that? What's the answer? Or put it this way, for those of you here who don't know what that is, how are you going to determine it?
By reading the Shastra.
By reading the Shastra? What else?
Consult
other sadhus? Yes? What else?
Spiritual master.
Have a guru. You have a spiritual master who will guide you. And why do we approach the spiritual master? For guidance, yeah, why? Why do we go to him specifically?
Yes,
Krishna's representative. So that way we know what we're doing is sanctioned then by Krishna. So therefore this last verse, 9, Jagyata Kamanon Yatra. I think at the end of the purport, Prabhupada says, if I'm not mistaken, this is the great art of doing work. Maybe I'll speak to read this, anyway. Yeah. Therefore, one has to work for the satisfaction of Vishnu. Any other work done in this material world will be a because, you know, at the end of the second chapter, Krishna has given us a lot of information about a lot of things, and Prabhupada says this is unsystematic the way it's been presented. So now he's going to be very clear with information. So it's explained here. Any other work done in this material world will be a cause of bondage, for both good and evil work have their reactions. And any reaction binds the performer. This is the purport to chapter 9, right at the end, last paragraph. Therefore, one has to work in Krishna consciousness to satisfy Krishna or Vishnu. And while performing such activities, one is in a liberated stage. This is the great art of doing work. And in the process, and in the beginning, this process requires very expert guidance. Right? Not that I just do my own thing. Right? Do we just hand over the keys to the car to a person who's never driven a car before? Yeah, here's the keys. Should be right. See you later. No. You don't go on road when you've got an L plate. Right? You go with an instructor. One should therefore act very diligently under the expert guidance of a devotee of Lord Krishna, or under the direct instruction of Lord Krishna himself. Huh? under whom Arjuna had the opportunity to work. Nothing should be performed for sense gratification, but everything should be done for the satisfaction of Krishna. This practice will not only save one from the reaction of work, but also gradually elevate one to transcendental loving service of the Lord, which alone can raise one to the kingdom of God. Very nice. Okay. What was Prabhupada's mood in relationship to renunciation? What was Prabhupada's attitude towards renunciation? What's the parallel between Arjuna going to the forest or wanting to go to the forest and devotees, you know, in ISKCON wanting to go to Vrindavan and chanting 64 rounds a day? Huh? Prabhupada wanted us to preach. There's a story. Morning?
I think Prabhupada also wanted that after a certain age that people should become, take up severe relationship and family and become renunciate.
Yes, but then what to do?
Preach.
Yeah, to preach. There's a lady who was at the festival and he was chanting 60 days. And he built a hut, I think, down near the Ganga, you know, and the devotees told Prabhupada that he was chanting so many rounds a day. Prabhupada wasn't that impressed. And of course, eventually he went away. he wasn't coming from the classes and so forth. He wasn't associating with the other devotees. And then he eventually went off into Maya. When the devotees told him, you know, I was chanting 60 for the Prabhupada, just wasn't impressed. He wanted practical renunciation, practical utility of things. Do we use this idea of this scriptural injunction to get out of doing things? No, nobody does. So I read this story. I can see you, a few of you are a bit tired. I might put you right to sleep with this story. Let's see. There was once a righteous Brahmana named Kasyapa. He had mastered all the scriptures and was expert in explaining them. He's a devotee of Nisringadev, always performing jagya. He was disinclined to performing another's duty. Right, he was a brahmana. Right? Every morning and evening he would offer oblations into the sacred fire and he would always show proper hospitality to the brahmanas and guests at his residence. His wife was named Savitri. She was a high-minded lady, was honoured for her virtue and led a spotless life in service to her husband. Due to her chastity and devotion, she was endowed with the power of knowing things beyond the range of the senses. So if you, ladies, if you want to become mystics, then serve your husbands. Huh? There was also a wise Brahmana named Jagya Sharma living in the land of Kaushala. He had a devoted and religious wife named Rohini, who was endowed with all auspicious features and an unblemished character. After some time, Rohini gave birth to a son. Jagya Sharma performed all the recommended purificatory ceremonies for his son as described in the Vedas. The boy was named Deva Sharman. When he was 8 years old, his father performed his sacred dead ceremony and engaged him in study of the Vedas. After Deva Sharman had mastered the Vedas, his father died. Huh? At the death of Jagya Sharman, both the son and mother, Deva Sharman performed funeral ceremonies for his father according to the instructions of saintly persons. And then he decided to travel to different places of pilgrimage. His fame as a great Brahmachari gradually spread far and wide. He had no residence and was always wandering from one place to another. Maintaining himself by begging alms, he was always chanting Vedic mantras and performing sacrifices. Meanwhile, with her husband dead and her only son living as an ascetic, Deva Sharma's mother, Rahini, had no means of support and was suffering terribly. So we're dealing with two couples. The first couple, whose wife was a mystic due to her chastity. And then the second couple were very pious. They had a son, but then the son left home after the father died and wasn't looking after his mother, who was a brahmachari. In the course of his wanderings, one day Deva Sharma came to the bank of a river where he took bath. Spreading his cloth on the ground to dry, he sat in meditation. Just then, a crow and a crane came and suddenly flew away with his cloth. Seeing this, Deva Sharma became angry and shouted abuses at him. The birds then dropped the cloth on the ground, passed stool on it, and flew away. Deva Sharma looked at them with wrath and immediately surprised to see this, Deva Sharma concluded that there was no one in the world equal to him in penance. To see my prowess. Proud of the strength of his austerity, Deva Sharma left the river to seek alms at a nearby village. He came to the house where the devoted wife Savitri and her husband Kasyapa lived. This is the first couple mentioned in the beginning of the story. Deva Sharma came to their door and requested Savitri to give him alms. However, Savitri was just then serving her husband his midday meal. Although she saw Deva Sharma at the door, she remained silent and attentive to her husband. She washed his feet with warm water. Only then did she come forward to the brahmachari. Having been made to wait for so long, Deva Sharma was very angry. There's steam coming out of his ears. He glared at the devoted housewife again and again with red hot eyes. Seeing his conduct, Savitri laughed and said, "Oh, furious sage, I am not the crow or the crane that fell down dead on the bank. By the strength of your anger. If you want to accept alms from me, you will have to behave properly." Collecting the by Savitri, Deva Sharma quietly left that place. Walking back to the river, he again and again thought in his mind how it was that she had come to know of the death of the crow and the crane. How would she know that? Leaving his begging, he didn't know her mystic potency. Leaving his begging bowl by the river, Deva Sharma returned to the village. After the devoted Savitri had finished her meal and her husband had gone out, the brahmachari came to her residence and said, "O blessed woman, please tell me how you acquired this mystic power of knowing things beyond the senses." Right? How did you know? Savitri replied, "O Brahmana, listen attentively to the answer to this question. The mystic power that I possess is the result of careful and consistent observance of the prescribed duties of a chaste wife." Interesting. There's a contrast here between her and the brahmachari. Service to one's husband is the established duty of women. Don't want to bash it over the head with this. Oh, high-minded one. I have always followed that duty. Indeed, I know nothing else. I have acquired this power because I have complete satisfaction to my husband waiting upon him with devotion. If you are interested to listen, I will tell you something else. Your father was a brahmana who lived on alms. You took lessons from him on the Vedas. When he died, you performed his funeral ceremonies. Then, ignoring your aged and widowed mother, you came here. That poor, wretched woman is now without any support, while your sole interest is only to feed yourself. Huh? Brahmachari? Begging alms? Performing great austerities? Your mother bore you in her womb. After you were born, she nurtured you and looked up with all love and affection. She did it for you, including cleaning your stool. Can you think of the sacrifices that mums make for their kids? We forget these things. You have deserted her and have been practicing austerities in the forest. O Brahmana, aren't you ashamed? What do you hope to gain by wandering about in the forest? He got the potency of burning up a crow and a crane. Wonderful. Because of the suffering of your mother, a bad odour is coming from your mouth. Whatever strength and power you have is only due to your father, who performed various samskaras in your life. O evil-minded sinner, just recently you had two births. As a result of this, all of your baths, your visits to different holy places, and all your meditation and sacrifices have been in vain. O Brahmana, that person who sees his mother in a poor and wretched condition lives in vain, whereas he who is full of regard for his mother and who always protects her with devotion gets all rewards in this world and hereafter. Right? Interesting. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu honoured the request of his mother. Right? Even when he took sannyas. Set an example. You should immediately go to your mother and save her life. Her protection is your highest penance. Give up your error in this world and in the next. In other words, what's the point of becoming such a renunciate? You come across some obstacle and then what happens? You become angry. You should atone for the sins of killing the birds. O Brahmachari, what I have spoken to you is correct. If you are interested in ultimate happiness, you should follow my advice. Having thus advised the son of the Brahmana, the devoted wife fell silent. Devashanam then said to Savitri, O blessed lady, please forgive me for the harm I have done to you by looking at you in anger. You have told me what is good for me. O righteous lady, after returning to take care of my mother, what duty shall I perform to attain the supreme goal? So he took her through. The wife Savitri replied, listen carefully. I shall now tell you the duties that you have to perform. You should maintain your mother by begging, and you should also perform the prescribed atonement for the sin of killing the two birds. In the land of Kosala, there is a girl born in a Brahmin family who is destined to be your wife. When you return home, her father will offer her to you. You should accept her at that time. She will give birth to a baby boy who will perpetuate your family. With the passing away of your wife, you should take up the order of Tridandi Sannyas. Provided you sincerely follow the disciplines of the Sannyas Ashram, then my death will shift you to the abode of Lord Vishnu. Because for me, I prophesy all of these things. If you do not have faith in my words, then you may do as you like. The Brahmana, Devasharman, said, O devoted wife, I will immediately return to take care of my mother. O auspicious one, when I reach there, I will do everything according to your advice. Having said this, Devasharman at once started for his home. There, free from anger and delusion, he maintained his mother with all care. He married and was blessed with a son. When his wife passed away, he took up the life of a wandering mendicant. He treated pebbles, stones and gold on an equal level and by the grace of Lord Nisringadev, he attained the spiritual abode of the Lord. So, what's the moral of the story? I'll read some more. One may ask how it was that the brahmachari was obliged to maintain his aged mother. Right? Why was he expected to look after his mother? Since he had devoted himself to religious pursuits and was strictly following the vows of brahmacharya, would he not be free from this obligation as per the following injunction of Srimad Bhagavatam? Devashi bhutaptan rinam pitrinam na kinkaro. Doesn't have to become a servant. Anybody. Savatmanaya sharanam saranyam gato mukundam parihritya kartam. If he's taken shelter of Mukunda, then he doesn't have to serve anyone. So the answer is, it should be noted, however, that this injunction of the Bhagavatam applies only to those persons who have taken full shelter of the Lord. Although the brahmachari Devashaman appeared to be living a highly pious life, his activities were still on the material platform. So he was acting like a renunciate, but it was not as a devotee. So it was material activities. His objective was material piety through performing religious activities, not at home in pursuit of the Supreme Lord, nor had an association of transcendentalists, nor had he taken shelter of a bona fide spiritual master. Although he considered himself to be free from obligations to this world, because his pursuits were only external, it was improper for him to abandon his religious mother. Right? He'd given up his actual duty, prematurely. Right? Since his activities were still on the material platform, the only fruit he received from them was an increase in his false prestige. This pride developed into what? What comes after pride?
Anger.
Anger. Right, so when the birds passed on, he burned them to ashes, killed them. Devashaman had some faith in pious religious activities, thus he had karma adhikar, or qualification for acting according to the Vedic system of religiosity, but he did not have faith in surrendering to the Lord, thus he was devoid of bhakti adhikar, or qualification for performing Krishna bhakti. If those possessing karma adhikar do not follow the principles of varnashram dharma, then they become implicated in sin. For this reason, the chaste and omniscient housewife advised him to return home. Krishna has instructed Uddhava in the Bhagavatam, as long as one is not detached from fruited activity and material enjoyment, right? As long as one is not Krishna, beginning with the process of hearing and chanting his glories, has to act according to the religious principles of karma or varnashram. This is one of the reasons why, whilst we're engaged in devotional service to Krishna and we dedicate ourselves to pleasing Krishna at the same time, because we're not fully purified. Right? We're not fully purified, 100% surrendered to Krishna. Therefore, it's recommended that we engage in these activities of vana and ashram to protect us, right? To purify us. In the next chapter of the Bhagavatam, next chapter of the 11th canto, Krishna again says, being fixed in the position for which one is qualified is virtuous. The opposite, accepting a position for which one is unqualified is irresponsible. This is a definite conclusion. By acting according to his position in the Vedic system of Varnashram Dharma, Devashaman gradually developed genuine detachment. He then took to the order of sannyasa and in the end achieved the spiritual abode of the Lord. Okay. Hands up, all those who are ready to take sannyas. Not a lot of takers tonight. Who wants to go home and have a good snooze? Quite a few people I can see. Any comments or questions? What's the relevance of the story? But what else?
Have to be honest about our own position.
Yeah, we have to be honest about our position. But also from what we've read in the Bhagavad Gita, what else?
Very concerning, what is the duty unless you have a guru to guide you? You can get.
Yeah, you need somebody to guide you. That's good. Why do we need a guru? Yeah? What else? What's the opposite? We'll probably do the wrong thing. Rather than do the right thing, we'll do the wrong thing. And especially for us, you know, we need, as Krishna is encouraging Arjuna, we need to do devotional service as well. The Varnashram keeps us properly engaged, but then, you know, just being a paka, you know, Vaishya or a paka whatever, is only really beneficial for us when we start doing devotional service. Otherwise, what's good? He's doing all of these austerities, he's doing everything in a very paka way, but ultimately he's not, as Prabhupada said in those quotations, you know, the test of spiritual advancement is just not there. Interesting. Any comments, questions? Yes?
Is the pursuit of knowledge just for the sake of knowledge also sense gratification? Like if you're not...
Can be, yes. Yeah? Yes, I'm very learned. There's no one more learned than me. I can defeat anybody in debate. See, it's interesting, in devotional service we cultivate knowledge. It's not that we're against cultivating knowledge, but our cultivation of knowledge is to support, as we were discussing before, what?
Practice.
Is to support our practice, as Prabhu Ram mentioned, you know, so we know what we're doing. So, you know, it's not that Krishna is encouraging, this is the confusion Arjuna is saying, Krishna is encouraging me to fight, what about the cultivation of knowledge? But he's encouraging me also to the cultivation of knowledge. What am I supposed to do? They don't go together. But actually they're not mutually exclusive. So in Krishna consciousness we see that we perform our prescribed duties, but we do understand the ultimate beneficiary, the person for whom we should be pleased, we should be pleasing, is Krishna. We've been doing all of these things for Krishna. That's where the knowledge, and that's ultimately where the detachment will come from when we realise that. Anything else? Bedtime. So you're all pretty tired. One more day to go. Friday. There's a very famous song. It's called Monday, I've Got Friday on my. Just one more day to go. And then it'll be the week. Huh? You notice that? What do the Aussies say on Friday? You know what they say? They say to you? Have a good weekend. Have a good weekend, mate. Alright, now, not this coming Sunday, but the Sunday before Janmashtami, we won't be having a class. And we can have a, if you want, we can have a class on Vyasa Puja night.
No.
You turn the heater up really high. You have a good snooze.